This is Neijing Now, prioritizing well-being.
Neijing is the vitality that shields us from disease.
Neijing Now, placing and taking responsibility for the health of the individual and the planet. From molecular biology to global ecology, from political, social, economics to psychology and spirituality. Neijing Now, demystifying medicine, empowering host resistance. We can be found on the web at neijingnow.org, neijingnow.org. I'm Dr. Jayashree Chander, and I welcome you to another edition of Exploring Neijing Now. In this episode, Dr. Gamberini, professor of dentistry, tells us about the importance of the mouth and teeth in digestion and elimination.
The mouth is not something different from the body.
Dr. Mascani, professor of colorectal surgery, speaks about the reciprocal relationship between the health of the rectum and anus.
The quality of life and also of the anus can change.
Marc-Antoine tells us about the French bidet.
No, we don't use French bidet anymore. We use toilet paper.
And Yumi Aikawa, the Japanese bidet.
Toilet paper just doesn't do justice.
Dr. Gamberini is a professor of endodontics and restorative dentistry at Sapienza University Hospital in Rome, Italy. He informs us about dental services offered as part of the Italian National Health Service and educates us about the importance of the mouth and teeth in digestion and elimination. Good morning, Dr. Gamberini. Welcome to Neijing Now.
Thank you. Hope it's a good morning. It's a fine weather in Rome here, and summertime has just begun.
Wonderful. You're a professor of dentistry?
Yes, I'm a professor of endodontics and restorative, but I also deal with international exchange program with students and professor, and I'm also vice dean of the dental hygiene school.
Wonderful. You have a lot of roles to play and a lot of responsibility.
Yes.
I understand in Italy, the national health insurance also covers any dental procedures.
Yes, actually, it's not a national health insurance, it's a national health system, like we have in other countries in Europe, especially in France. So you have all medical and all dental treatment free for, I would say, all the patients, theoretically, but usually free for the poorest patient, and with very, very low cost. Which means a cost that could be 10 times less than private for the normal patient, the wealthy patients.
And does this cover preventive care as well?
Yes, of course. It covers all the aspects of medicine and dentistry and preventive also.
Well, this is very unusual. At least in the United States, we separate the teeth from the rest of the body. So if you have health insurance, generally it doesn't cover your teeth.
No. In Italy, as you see here in our dental school, we have a dental building. Actually, we have, let's say, two owners. One owner is university and the other owner is the National Health Service. So in this building where you are now, this is university, and the building where we met yesterday, that was the National Health System.
I see. It's also unusual in other parts of the world where they have a national health system, but often they still don't cover the teeth.
No, very few countries include teeth. Now what we have here, our national healthcare for dentistry is utilized two different structures. Structure number one is university, in which we provide a very high level standard of care, because we also have to teach our students, our pre-graduate and our postgraduate. Then the other, you have local offices, in which usually they do the most basic things, like prevention, a little bit of decays and periodontal treatment, mobile prosthetics, but they don't do complex work like we do endodontics, implants, or whatsoever. The very interesting thing of our system that you can have really the best quality of care given for free to every patient.
It is really quite remarkable, and I'm wondering why or how it is that Italy is, can I say, very broad-minded and progressive in including the teeth.
Well, this is a part of our social attitude. Since many years, people are accustomed to have the national government to take care of their health. As you know, probably Italy is one of the places where you live longer. Maybe not for only for the food, not only for the good weather, but also because we have this national health system.
Yes, I think the World Health Organization a few years back ranked Italy as number 2 in terms of their health status and health care.
Yes, I think that France was number 1 and Italy was number 2, but also being in France, and I had to go to visit a doctor, and the system was very well organized, very similar to Italy. So that's why I think that the two are ranked among the best in the world.
Okay, so tell us why the rest of the world should also include teeth as part of their healthcare system.
Well, as you know, there are a lot of diseases which are related with teeth. And also, if you don't have any problem with teeth, you may have a much better life, even if you have other disease. The mouth is not something different from the body. It's in between the brain and the other part of the body. So I don't say the opposite. Why you should separate it? This division is not real.
I agree with you. This current series in Aging Now is focusing on digestion and elimination. And I wonder if you could speak about the role of teeth in digestion and elimination. I mean, it seems obvious, but I'd like you to tell us.
Well, at least in Italy, but I think, let's say, in the western part of the world, we have a population that's growing. They live longer, and so they live their life with bigger problems about digestion, because these are typical disease of the older people. I mean, you can also have with the young people, but especially with the older people. There are two main reasons. One is that if you have good dentistry, you can eat well, you can eat whatever you like, you can digest properly, and this will help all your digestive system. So this is very important. It's not only a matter of quality of life, because a good dentistry makes quality of life better. It's also a matter of quality of health.
You're talking about elderly people having difficulty with their teeth and perhaps not even having teeth, and that makes it difficult for them to eat whatever they like to eat and to chew properly. But even younger people don't chew properly. Could you speak about chewing?
Well, I will put it in a very simple way for people to understand, because everything is connected, as I told you before. So chewing is so important for good digestion, to avoid a lot of problems in the process. But also, I would say that, speak about prevention, the oral environment is very important for prevention of infections. And also, if you have free care, you can go to the dentist more often, and you can have a visit that could be very useful for the prevention of cancer. Cancer in the mouth is not one of the main cause of death, we know, but still is a problem. So this is a part of a program in which prevention is very, very important. And also for people who have a problem with heart surgery, prevention of diseases of the cardiac implants that we have, that's very, very important. I don't know how this problem is solved in other countries, but in our country we were able to solve it.
So you're talking about periodontal infections affecting cardiac valve implants?
Yes, not only periodontal, but also endodontic infection or other kind of infection in the mouth. So this is crucial. But also there are a lot of evidence about the relationship between infection in the mouth, periodontal infection, and heart problems. We cannot, and this is a big mistake, we cannot consider the mouth as a separate environment. It's part of the body, is totally connected with all the other part and has an influence. So prevention and treatment of the oral environment is prevention and treatment of the whole body.
Very well said, very well said. Thank you so much. What exactly happens when you chew? I mean, obviously your teeth are cutting up the food into smaller and smaller bits. There's something else with the enzymes in the saliva that help start to break down the carbohydrates.
Well, yes, it's both a mechanical and a chemical, let's say, treatment of the food that makes the food easier to digest. It will help the absorption of the food or the nutrients and the vitamins. And so this is the most important thing.
So when you chew, you're releasing saliva into the food, and that helps to break it down before the food arrives in the stomach, and it just makes it easier for the stomach to do its job and for the nutrition from the food to actually get absorbed into the body.
This is totally correct. And as for example, with old people, the production of saliva gets lower, and the people who has this kind of problem needs some treatment because it will help them to improve their digestion. Otherwise, they will have digestion problems.
Obviously, you can use fake teeth, dentures, if you don't have teeth. Can you comment on dentures?
Yes. This is a debate about our community, but there is no debate about the need for replaced teeth. The debate could be how we want to replace, and especially in a social health program, we may have economical problems to provide the best quality. But we made some effort. 5 years ago, the national government financed a project in which all the poor people with mobile prosthetics could go to the national health system and have at least 4 implants put inside the mouth just to hold the mobile prosthetics. So that was a very interesting project. And nowadays, implantology has become a treatment in our national health system. Probably we cannot afford to have totally fixed teeth for all the people, but if we find a good combination between mobile and implants, the people will have fixed teeth with reasonable cost. So in our system, we also have to find a balance between cost and efficiency, like everywhere in the world.
This is very interesting. So one of the problems when you have dentures or these removable teeth is that they don't fit well and you can't use them very effectively to chew. It's sometimes uncomfortable and they just don't work that well.
Yes, because even if you do a very good job from the very beginning, then the structure of the gum, the structure of the bone change a little bit, so you also have wear of the artificial teeth, so things change a little bit. Actually, in our national system, the patient can come back and we have their prosthetic device to a little bit rework. This is normal, but the other thing is to help them with implants.
So you put in 4 implants, 2 on the top, 2 on the bottom, on either side of the mouth, to help hold the dentures in place, and that keeps them from moving around and just makes it more effective to chew.
Yes, of course.
That's wonderful. That's a really great service that you provide.
Well, yes.
Let's talk about the other end of the spectrum in children, because childhood is a time when, well, you start out with no teeth and then you develop a certain set of teeth. You lose that set and you get another set. So how does this lack of teeth and the new teeth and the second set affect digestion and elimination?
Oh, well, our national health system is mainly focused on the childhood from 0 to 12 years.
You mean in terms of dentistry?
In terms of dentistry and also in terms of general medicine.
Really? That's really interesting.
Yes, yeah, so regardless how rich you are, all the population from 0 to 12 has free medical and free dental treatment. And the same happens with people from 65 to 100 years. So this we call our special age, in which we are very keen about prevention and treatment. So with kids, we have prevention for also occlusion, free preventive orthodontic treatment, because if we start going on the right path from the very beginning, we will save a lot of money when they grow older. If the young children are instructed how to clean their teeth, how to take care of the teeth, they are familiar with the dentist, they will go back happily in future, and they will take care. We made such a big effort from 0 to 12 years in order to save money and improve health for the elder.
That shows so much foresight on the part of your government.
Yeah, it's not only for dentistry, this is also for medical. You cannot think about prevention, you cannot think about treatment if you don't try to do at least the best thing from the very beginning.
Beautifully said. When you said that you focus on occlusion, could you explain what that is?
people has an idea of misplaced teeth as an aesthetic problem. This is also an aesthetic problem, but it is also a chewing problem, because if the teeth are misplaced or the bones are misplaced, chewing is not as effective, and it may lead also to other big problems like postural problems, like headaches. Trying to have all the different system, the mouth, the head, and the spinal arch, all in a good position in order not to develop some pathology that would be much, much more complex to treat when a person is already grown up and when all the system has stabilized in a wrong way. This is really very, very difficult and tough to solve. So when we speak about prevention and orthodontic prevention in children, we are now starting to focus on all these aspects, and we have our dental school as a very good connection with the pediatric department here, so we work together a lot on this.
Wonderful. You're talking about braces, the wires that you have on children's teeth to fix their alignment of the teeth. When you have crooked teeth, you make them straight so that they meet each other, the top teeth meet the bottom teeth properly. And you're right, usually we think of it more in terms of having nice straight teeth so that you're beautiful and you have a nice smile. But you're talking about how it's very important for the functioning of the teeth so that you can chew properly, but also then how that affects the spine and the head and the whole skeletal system.
This is not my main field of interest, but we have a lot of professors here that are very knowledgeable about this problem. So we have professor of endodontics, professor of gnatology. It's a discipline that takes care of chewing connected with the old body, with the bones and everything.
You have a whole specialty devoted to chewing?
Yes, sort of.
That's beautiful. So is there anything different about the first set of teeth compared with the second set of teeth and how that affects chewing and digestion?
Well, this is a very complicated matter, but anyway, once again, everything is connected. If you have a problem with your primary teeth, that may affect also your secondary teeth. So I think you should start to take care from the very beginning. This is the only thing I can say, just to cut it short.
One of the most common problems is just cavities or caries. Well, how does that affect our digestion and elimination?
Well, obviously, there are lots of things. When you have pain, when you have a sore tooth, you cannot chew properly, and so actually you that affects your digestion. If you have a missed teeth, the same thing happens. So we try to take care of teeth from the very beginning. Mainly what we do, we try to focus on motivation of patient, on teaching them how to brush the teeth, and how important is it in the prevention of decay. Then it may happen that some people has decay and some people has not, but if you have a good prevention program, overall you will have less need of dental treatment in the old population. This is one of our goal.
Throughout the whole lifetime.
Yes, and speaking about good and bad news, it's in the past we had a more efficient structure that was also called medicine in the school. So we have doctors in the primary school that go there and also visit for orthodontic problems and decays. Unfortunately, now this program is a little bit less financed than it was used in the past. So we now try to develop some program with the National Health in which university help give support to this kind of treatment. So we have, let's say, our students, young doctors that goes there in the school and do this kind of survey program. Even if the patient don't come to us, we'll try and go and find them.
That's good for business.
No, that's not business. This is social health. So it's not a question of money. It's we know that if we prevent problems in a very early age, that will save a lot of money in the future for us.
That's very, very good. I really congratulate you on thinking so progressively. In this episode of Naging Now, I also spoke with a surgeon about the anus and the rectum and how digestion and elimination affects the health of the anus and rectum. I'd also like to make the connection of how the mouth and teeth are related to the health of the anus.
Oh, I would say that it's related to all the digestive process. There, just, once again, there's not one place on another place. Everything is connected. We know that there are a very big connection with some bacteria in the mouth and bacteria in the intestine or in the stomach. So obviously, whenever you have problem in one place, there's always, you always say that if a leaf falls from a very distant island in the Pacific, it may become a rain in Rome. So the same happens with the body.
Thank you so much for taking the time to share with us how the system in Italy works and how foresighted the thinking is about the teeth and its relationship to the entire health of the body. And I just want to congratulate you.
Thank you a lot.
Thank you. Dr. Gamberini, a professor of dentistry at Sapienza University Hospital in Rome, Italy. Dagena, dage, dinna, dagena, dage, dinna, dagena, dage, gena, dage, dinna, gena, kittakatrikit, takta, terkit, takta, takta, terkit, dati, da, dati, da, kittakatrikit, nagate, terkit, da, dagena, dage, dinna, dagena, dage, dinna, dagena, dage, gena, dage, dinna, gena, kittakatrikit, takta, terkit, takta, takta, terkit, dati, da, dati, da, kittakatrikit, nagate, terkit, da. Dr. Mascani is a professor of colorectal and general surgery at Sapienza University Hospital in Rome, Italy. He spoke with me about the reciprocal relationship between the health of the rectum and anus and digestion and elimination. Dr. Mascani, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to me today.
Okay, you're welcome.
What kind of surgery do you do?
Colorectal surgery and coloanal is our main interest.
Great. What I want to talk to you about today is the relationship between digestion and elimination or evacuation and the health of the rectum and the anus.
Yeah, it's very important, in particular in this part of Europe in which we don't use a lot of fibers. And in our country, with our attitude of life and with our behavior also with the ingestion of food, in particular with low fibers, with meat, with a kind of life very quick. And so a lot of male and in particular female can have problem with evacuation. We can have a lot of problem in our colon and rectal and anus, in particular hemorrhoids and other physiological alteration of rectum and anus due to stipsis.
Stipsis means constipation, right?
Yeah, constipation. And we can arrive that stipsis can be correlated with rectal and colorectal cancer.
We think of the Mediterranean diet as very healthy and good for your heart and lots of olive oil, but you are correct in terms of fiber. Pasta is very low in fiber, pizza is very low in fiber.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. It's very healthy, the Mediterranean diet, but usually I've recommended 3-4 ingestion of fibers a day.
You mean 3 or 4 servings of vegetables or fruits?
Yeah. 3 or 4 or more. And I think with this kind of life, no one usually do this. For example, you assist to our lunch and was a piece of bread and nothing more and a cup of Coke.
And you're the doctor.
Yeah, we speak well and then we do bad. But, you know, in some families it's not very common to use vegetables more than 3-4, in particular with children. Young people are more used to go to McDonald's or to pizza restaurant or to eat meat or fish, but not vegetables. And I think this is a great problem for evacuation. And another important problem is to drink water. You know, vegetables without water is unsuccessful for evacuation, but water is very important.
And Coca-Cola does not count as water.
No.
So McDonald's and Coke have ruined everything.
Yeah, but...
The problem with constipation and evacuation with the health of the rectum and the anus is, number one, hemorrhoids, maybe fistulas and fissures.
Yeah, fissures is more common when you have constipation.
A fissure is a crack in the skin around the anus.
Skin, correct. And the crack in the skin can be deep and deep, and so to arrive to constitute a fistula.
So what happens is that you get a crack in the skin around the anus, it gets deeper and deeper, and it turns into a little tunnel, a little tube from the outside to the rectum. And in that tunnel, sometimes the pus and bacteria grow, and you get an abscess, a boil.
Perfectly correct. I think this is very common. It's not a rule, and so not all patients with constipation have this, but if feces remain in the colon and rectum, can be not a cancerogen, but a co-cancerogen, can have a correlation. They are not cancerogenic aspect, but a co-cancerogenic aspect for colorectal cancer.
Constipation is a co-correlate for colorectal cancer.
Co-cancerogenic agent for cancer. In patients that have a chronic constipation for a long time, it's very difficult to do an epidemiologic study on this patient, but can be a concause, not a cause, but a minor cause for development of a colorectal cancer.
Can increase the risk.
Yeah.
Chronic constipation can increase the risk for colorectal cancer.
For all the pathology, but the contrary is not the truth. And so a patient can have a normal evacuation and can have colorectal cancer.
So one of the problems with hemorrhoids and with fissures and with fistulas is that it actually makes the constipation worse because it's very painful to evacuate when you have a hemorrhoid or a fistula or a fissure. So then the person doesn't want to evacuate and they hold it further.
Correct. I completely agree with this. In particular, I would like to begin from children. Children doesn't speak about this. And if they have a constipation, especially female, because I think water, vegetable, also physical activity can be very important. And so if you make sport, if you run, it's much less frequent to have constipation. And so if you begin from children to check to give fibers and water and to check if children really go to the bathroom to have a normal evacuation can be very important. Otherwise, they associate pain, like you told before, pain with evacuation, and they tend not to go to the bathroom.
So can we talk about hemorrhoids a little bit? Because hemorrhoids are very, 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 very common.
The straining can be a factor that can increase the prolapse of the rectum. And we know that the theory of prolapse, more than vascular theory, today can be recognized for the development of hemorrhoids.
How do you think of digestion, elimination, and all the problems in the rectum and anus as a surgeon?
As a surgeon, I think that a correct alimentation, a correct ingestion of fibers and water can help to have a normal evacuation. And a normal evacuation is very important to avoid some factors of risk for benign hemorrhoid, fissure and anal fistulas, and also for malignant colorectal cancer. In this patient with constipation, if they have a family for cancer and if they have bleeding, this is very important, is mandatory to do a colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy is when you look inside the whole colon, investigate, you inspect the whole colon.
With optical fibers, you look directly.
Dr. Mascagni, in this program, we're also talking to a dentist about the relationship between teeth and digestion. And so I also want to make this connection between the teeth and the anus.
Yeah, we are very far from.
But it looks like it's very far, but it's very related.
Yeah, yeah. The correlation with teeth and all the body are increasing, but the anus is very far. It's very far. It's a long way.
If you had to, as a surgeon, make a correlation between the teeth and the mouth and the anus.
Maybe the use of teeth. If you eat very fast, if you don't chew, okay. If you don't chew accurately, and if you don't have a good ingestion, a good digestion, maybe this can obstacle defecation to create all the problems that we spoke before.
Do you have anything to say about how the health of the anus affects the digestion?
But you told before about that if you have pain and if you have constipation, if you have hemorrhoid fissure in anus or fistulas, you don't want to eat because you don't want to go to the bathroom. And so this is a
vicious cycle.
Yeah, 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 yeah. It's very important, this. 20 years ago, when we operated hemorrhoids, we say don't eat. Now we tend to have a soft early defecation after the operation. It's completely changed. And the same we have to do when we have pathology without operation. It's much better to go to the bathroom with soft feces than with hard, or not to go because can be a problem later.
What about hygiene in the perianal area? I think hygiene also affects the health of the anus.
Yeah, I think it's one of the main problem, for example, in England or in the country where I don't use to wash the anus after evacuation.
You mean with water?
Yeah, it's very important.
Because actually in the United States and in England, it's pretty much only paper.
Yeah. It's our problem where we travel, where we have a trip in England, the United States, and my mind think I have to sell bidet in that country because I think the quality of life and also of the anus can change.
So talk about exactly what happens if you only use toilet paper. How does that affect your health of the anus?
The percentage of itching, anal itching in England, in the United States and in Italy is completely different. And it's not depends on the president of the United States and Italy.
Okay, so anal itching is a problem if you only use toilet paper. Is that because of the fragrances and chemicals in the toilet paper, or is it because you just cannot get clean enough?
Yeah, if you use water and if you can just clean just with paper, is not the same. We don't have study on this, but it's evident. I am a proof of this. When I go to the United States and in England, the region of my anus is completely different. And all the people that are used to, they feel the modification. And itching in England, the percentage of itching in the normal people is higher.
What about hemorrhoids and fissures and fistulas? Is that also affected by hygiene?
I think it's mandatory that after evacuation, you have to keep clean this area. I don't know the exact correlation with hemorrhoids and hygiene, but I think hygiene is very important, like for teeth. And so this is the correlation between anus and teeth.
The position for evacuation also affects, because in the West, we use the commode, seated style, but in Asia, they squat. And when you squat, also, you have easier time to clean and an easier time to evacuate.
Yeah, squat is better. Squat is better. Turkish bathroom are maybe the best position. So maybe Turkish people can have in mind my idea to send Turkish bathroom here.
Great. So we need to have a Turkish bathroom all over the world and use water.
This can be the future.
Wonderful. Do you have anything else you would like to add about the abdominal pressure when you squat, or anything you want to add?
This is very important. You have to have a correlation, a synergy between the pressure of the abdomen and the opening of the anus. If you don't have this, you have a dyssynergy, and so also you can use a physiotherapy to improve the synergy between abdomen and anus. This is another important problem.
When you are squatting, you actually get assistance from the position to increase your abdominal pressure.
Position, tone, and then a good synergy with the opening of the anus.
Wonderful. Anything else you would like to add about digestion, elimination, the health of the anus?
No, because you are from India. If I want to add something that make a trip in India, because it's one of the most wonderful trip in the world.
And you will learn a lot about your digestion and elimination in India.
I like Indian food, you know.
Thank you, Dr. Mascagni, for talking to me. It's been very interesting and entertaining.
It's very funny also for me.
Thank you. Dr. Mascagni, professor of surgery at Sapienza University in Rome, Italy. Marc-Antoine Senechal, a native of France, tells us about the French bidet. Marc-Antoine, welcome to Naging Now.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Now, you know, in this issue of Naging Now, we spoke with a colorectal surgeon about the health of the perianal region and how that's related with digestion and elimination. And he mentioned the bidet. As far as I know, France is famous for the bidet.
Yeah, so, but we just never use them. We still have some few ones. Of course, I very regularly see some French bidets when I visit friends because they bought old houses, but you would not have a French bidet, I guess, in a new house. It's not used anymore. I never learned how to use them. I mean, it's not too difficult, I could guess, but... No, we don't use French bidet anymore. We use toilet paper.
So this is kind of a myth, yeah. that in France they use the bidet.
Yes, it is a myth. I mean, of course, I don't go and follow them in the bathroom, but I guess nobody uses a bidet anymore.
The old houses have a toilet and then a separate bidet. It's like another thing that almost looks like a toilet, but it has water that squirts out of it, and you can use the water to wash your bum. When did people stop using the bidet?
Before I was born. I think they stopped in the 60s.
Do you have any understanding of why they stopped using the bidet?
Not an understanding, but I could guess that there is a certain laziness. As simple as that, although it makes so much sense to, I mean, not to use paper because it's totally useless, but...
Why do you say it's totally useless?
Because you could just use the water with which you've cleaned yourself and put it in the toilet so that you can flush with this water and it will be just so much better and you... feel much cleaner. I mean, having been in countries like India, I feel much better cleaning myself with water, with paper. It's not natural.
Your time in India was the first time that you ever experienced cleaning yourself with water?
Absolutely, yes.
You never did that in France. I'm just surprised, that's all.
Yes, I never did that. Through my education, I would have not think about cleaning with water. I'm quite surprised, actually, that you're asking me today, because it's not in our life anymore. Even my parents. But no, I'm going to ask my grandparents. I don't even need to ask my parents. They would just...
They'll laugh at you.
Yeah.
And now you say that the new houses, they don't even bother with putting the bidet in.
Yes, they don't. They don't, for sure. It's a very strange situation because we just don't think of it. We don't talk about it. We all go to our bathroom, we see this thing and we just don't even ask what is it for. It's just like an antiquity.
Have you seen people put plants and use it as a storage item?
No, not even. It's just there.
Empty.
Empty and clean.
If you could describe your experience using water in India, it's very different. They don't have bidets in India. It's not another separate structure that looks like a commode, a seated toilet. In general, you either have the commode or you have a squatting toilet. Most Westerners go to India and they still use the commode.
Well, my first experience was kind of funny because it was a jet of water within the toilet itself.
The commode toilet?
Yes. And I didn't know about it, and it went on automatically, and it was very powerful jet, and that was fun. Very efficient. It just surprised me so much that I was not prepared for that. Otherwise, yes, I remember using, you know, you have like a bucket, and you just simply clean yourself from the tap. That's enough. That's perfect.
Did you find any difference with using water on a commode versus using water in the squatting position?
No, not any difference. But definitely once I've experienced that, I felt very awkward to use toilet paper again. Because once you've experienced that, you feel much better. It's much cleaner. And
you feel fresh.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So now that you are back in the Western world, either in America or in France, you're not in India anymore. Are you still using water?
In my house, yes. When I can, I use water. Yes. I don't really do that at friends' house because they don't have a bidet. And so I don't want to use their shower because, you know, this is...
Well, it's also a little cumbersome to take a shower every time you go to the bathroom.
Yeah. That's true.
So you said that you do have a bidet in your house?
No, I don't.
Then how do you use the water?
I go to my shower.
Oh, that's impressive. Doesn't that take a lot of time?
No. No, it's easy.
Okay. I mean, I could see, like, if you had a bathtub and you kind of, like, hang your bum into the tub and then use the tap water.
Yes, that's what we do. Because in France, the shower is not fixed on top. We can just take it in our hand and put it directly where it's needed.
Right, like it's a removable shower head on a flexible hose.
Yes, it's always like that in France.
You're not actually removing your socks and shoes and everything.
No. But I definitely think that we should rethink the entire way we've built our toilets.
Tell me what your thoughts are.
There are countries like Japan who have understood that since a long time.
Well, in Japan, I've heard that they even attach the blow dryer to the bidet.
Wow, yes, I'm not even surprised. Oh yes, once, I mean, one of the most exciting thing you could ever visit are all those, as you say, those fairs in Japan specialized on toilets. To go to a fair where to see new cars is more boring because they are so imaginative and creative when it's time to talk about toilets.
Have you been to one of these fairs?
No, friends of mine told me how crazy it is. But every day, everybody in Japan at least have these systems. When they wash their hands or whatever, they use the wastewater, the used water, to fill their toilets. For example, that's the basics. They don't use clean water.
The water that you use when you take a bath or a shower, or the water that you use when you wash your hands or your dishes, it all gets piped to the toilet tank.
Yes, and I assume it's just like that in every single house in Japan, yes.
That's impressive. You're not wasting your grey water.
Absolutely.
Here's another question then. What are your thoughts about the fact that we're even putting our human waste into water at all?
Well, it is so... I mean, I don't find the word to say how disastrous and ridiculous it is. I don't know if I have to laugh or cry because it is so silly. Because it's exactly the contrary that our excrement needs to be, I mean, it's such a fertilizer, you say. We just destroy it by putting it in pristine water. It's just the contrary, it needs to dry for the chemical process to occur. So here is just another example of our crazy way of life.
It's just misguided development.
Misguided development, yes.
Our human excrement should be kept away from our water source.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Definitely, it's a huge mistake to put them in water, that's for sure. And plus, to use just first-class drinkable water on top of that is...
criminal.
Yeah.
You're basically speaking to our misguided development being partly a product of population density.
No, I don't think it's a product of people density.
It's just human density.
Yes, human density, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
No, there is nothing to add here.
It's very generous of you to even offer to share your experience at all with us. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you.
Pleasure for me too.
Marc-Antoine and the French bidet. De, din, din, da. Da da gena tage tinna da gena tage tinna da gena tage gena tage tinna gena kita tak teri kita tak ta teri kita kita tak teri kita tak ta teri kita da ti da da ti da kita tak teri kita nagde teri kita 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 da da gena tage tinna da gena tage tinna da gena tage gena tage tinna gena kita tak teri kita tak ta teri kita tak teri kita tak ta teri kita da ti da da ti da kita tak teri kita nagde teri kita da kita tak teri kita nagde teri kita da kita tak Yumi Aikawa, a native of Japan, informs us about the Japanese bidet. Hello, Yumi. Welcome to Neijing Now.
Thank you.
Yumi, you grew up in Japan, right?
I did, until I was 12.
Can you share with us your experience with the Japanese bidet?
Sure. It's one of my favorite things. Well, oftentimes it'll come with a heated seat.
Wow, that's nice.
Which is nice during the winter, especially.
Is the toilet look like a Western seated toilet?
When I was growing up, you still had both like the squat toilets as well as Western style, which is a sit-down type. I think it was during a transition of going from the squats to sitting. At my house, we had both.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you remember which one you preferred?
Actually, I enjoy the squats.
Why?
I think it's just like a natural physical stance for a biological function. It makes sense, I think.
Yeah, it's just easier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And a little cleaner, too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think part of the reason why Japanese people nowadays prefer, you know, electric bidet toilets are because it's, you know, cleans you a bunch better. So it splashes your water. You have an option of blowing warm air, blow dry as well.
Nice. Is the blow dryer come in every single toilet?
I don't think so, but a lot of them do. My family rebuilt the house, and when they rebuilt it, we put in the most updated versions of these toilets. So not only do we have the bidet that can adjust in location...
Can you describe exactly what you mean?
Okay, so there are buttons for, you know, feminine needs.
Like you can change the direction of the water for female anatomy or male anatomy?
No, female anatomy and just general pooping anatomy.
Okay, I understand. So you can change the direction of the spray of the water for female anatomy, yep, and for general population use.
Exactly. And then there's different setting for the water pressure level. You can go from high to low.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And then also you can control the temperature of the water.
Wow, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Because you don't want it to get too hot. You don't want it to be too cold either. It's a sensitive skin down there. At least our family toilet also has a light.
Where's the light?
Inside the toilet.
Inside the bowl?
Yes. The point is, at night in a cold, dark winter night, you walk in. First of all, the toilet lid opens on its own.
How does it know to open on its own?
There is a little motion sensor that allows the toilet lid to open.
You have to be near the toilet.
Yeah, you kind of open the door, walk in. It just opens.
What if you're just walking in to wash your hands?
Well, so in Japan, one thing that you should remember is that usually toilets are in its separate compartments. So there is a sink outside of the little toilet closet.
I see.
So you really walk in to just go to the use the bathroom.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's actually kind of common. In England, they used to call it the WC, right?
Yes.
When I think of the bidet, I think of, like in Europe, you have your commode toilet, and then you have a whole separate porcelain structure that is the washing bowl.
Yeah.
But it sounds to me like in Japan, the washing happens on the commode toilet.
Yeah, I think historically speaking, I think of many Asian countries, the squat toilets and used to have ladle and buckets of water instead of wiping. That's the cultural way of cleaning after using the bathroom, I think. But with the technological advancement, and Japan loves, you know, these technologically savvy things. So I think they just ended up developing something that's, you know, hands-free and I guess more sanitary in a way.
But if it's hands-free, does it actually really clean well?
Well, so that's why I think it's been innovated so that you can adjust the angle and the water pressure level and things like that. And I think that helps a lot.
And then you get the blow dry. Is that an option or it just automatically comes on?
It's all option. And then you can also, you know, start and stop whenever you want. And same with the air dry, you can have either use it or not use it. You know, the length is up to you. I think you can also control the heat level of the air as well.
Wow, that is so fancy.
It is pretty fancy, but I really think that, you know, I like it because it's so sanitary. I'm a big fan of cleaning things, especially areas that need to get clean.
The perianal region really needs to be kept clean because if there's any traces of residue, it causes a lot of irritation and itching, and it's not good to have it not be clean. And actually, toilet paper just doesn't work as well.
It definitely doesn't. My father used to practice dermatology, and he used to see these really terrible cases of, you know, all sorts of infections. And
in the perianal region?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so I think it was kind of a culture within our family, a household, to kind of, you know, keep that area clean. You know, I didn't want to take a bath or shower, but they at least forced me to wash the privates, which I did. That was a motivation behind when we built the house to have those electric one installed.
It sounds really luxurious.
It is. And yeah, I like it. Heated seats are definitely nice, especially in the winter. You know, when you go to the bathroom in the middle of the winter at night, and it's like a shock to sit in a cold toilet seat. But the one we have at our house is heated pretty much 24/7.
That sounds cozy.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Would you be willing to describe your experience of actually using the bidet?
Sure. I like to use it when I defecate. I also like to use it when I have my period. When I go pee, not so much. It just gives me really refreshing feeling that it's actually cleaner. I know, as you said, like toilet paper just doesn't do justice. So I usually, you know, play around with the button and get it to the right place, wiggle my butt a little bit to make sure it's getting cleaned. And sometimes I use it blow dry, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just, like, you know, pat dry with toilet paper. But I love the feeling afterwards. It almost feels like you just had a shower.
So you keep a little toilet paper there also?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just looks like any other toilet, except it has this little box of buttons right where the toilet paper is. So, like, there's a toilet paper roll on the bottom, and on top of it are buttons.
The controls.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, when your parents built their new place, why they didn't still keep a squat toilet option?
Very, very good question. It's for the aging problem. My father is now no longer living there in a nursing home, but at the time when the building was being built, he was still home, and so squatting was pretty much out of the option. And, you know, my mother's also getting older. You know, they didn't want to squat.
Do you think if they would have just kept squatting all along, they would have been able to keep squatting till the end?
I mean, old people used to do it, but I think it's part of the luxury of westernized movement and Japanese culture in general. It's almost rare to find the squat toilets nowadays.
I mean, at the beginning of the interview, you called it advancement, but it may not actually be something that's actually really beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, you know, personally, as I said, like, I much prefer squats. I think it's more sanitary. I think it's more natural for the body to be. So I guess it's all the matter of perspective, but I was kind of speaking on behalf of the society in general, how they view things. You know, people probably think of me as like an eccentric hippie, you know?
Anything else you'd like to add?
If you have a chance to try it, I recommend trying all functions all the water, the air, everything, try at least once.
You better believe I'm going to try everything.
Yeah. Let me know how it goes.
Great. Thank you, Yumi. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yumi Aikawa and the Japanese bidet.
De, de, din, din, da. Teranaga teranaga taka taka teranaga titi giranaga tenitaga titi giranaga titi katana ta titi giranaga tenitaga daga titi giranaga tenitaga teranaga teranaga taka taka teranaga titi giranaga tenitaga titi giranaga titi katana ta titi giranaga tenitaga daga titi giranaga tenitaga.
Our concluding poem. Impatience, eating up my mind, anticipating the unknown, gnawing hunger in my bones with insatiable desire, despite fulfillment sitting untasted between my lips.
Nanjing Now was written, edited, recorded, and produced by Dr. Jayashree Chander. Website setup and design, Srinivas Pakanati and Dirk Polson. Tabla and manjira played by Jayasi. Bass guitar by Pedro Ordonez. Drum set by GC Garcia. Compositions from Pandit Swapan Chaudhary. Concluding poem written by Jayasi. Distributed by Gypsy Jays Productions. Found at gypsyjays.net. gypsyjays.net. You can find us on the web at nanjingnow.org. NEIJINGNOW.ORG.
Nanjing Now is an entirely listener-supported endeavor. Please donate generously if these programs are beneficial and enjoyable. Your support is essential to keep this program alive.